You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On the 17th of June 1972, a group of burglars working underneath staff of the Nixon administration broke into the Democratic National Committee office in the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C. This began the defining political scandal of the 20th century, as Richard Nixon and his colleagues continuously tried to cover up their involvement. This led to Nixon's impeachment and subsequent resignation in 1974, marking a major event in United States history that set a precedent for how we can hold politicians to account across the world. 50 years on, I spoke to University of Canterbury professor in American history Peter Field on the impact of Watergate and its presence in current conversations on the January 6th Capitol riots. I first asked him to recap the events of Watergate.
Right, so there were two or three parts. The first part was 1972, an election year, and the President of the United States, Richard Nixon, was running on the Republican side for re-election, and the Democrats, of course, would ultimately nominate George McGovern. And so the Democratic National Committee had a headquarters, and the Republicans thought it might be interesting to treat the choice of a sovereign leader of a nation and more as, say, a high school or college frat election. So they did. So I thought, wouldn't it be convenient if we did all kinds of dirty tricks? And one of them was to sneak into the Democratic National Committee headquarters, which was in Washington, D.C., in an apartment hotel complex called Watergate. So that's where we get the name. They broke into the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee, that is, they being an element of the Republicans, cheated on the Democrats, and they got caught. And it turns out it wasn't a frat party. It's actually breaking and entering, and therefore it's a crime. The next part turns out to be by far more significant than the first, because the first is stupid, childish, sophomoric. The second part is critical to understanding the nature of a regime that ultimately led to a constitutional crisis. So it became an affair of state. And that was because the second part was what we would call obstruction of justice. That is, you have folks caught in the act, and then you ask, well, who sent them to do this? And who sent them to do that? And who consulted with the folks who sent them to do it? And who consulted with those folks? In other words, how far up did this go? Who knew that you might commit a crime in order to get a president reelected? And as it turns out, the folks who knew were very important officials. They weren't just petty officials. They were the Attorney General of the United States, John Mitchell. They were advisors to the president. And then ultimately, the president asked to know what was going on. And when the president was told, then the president had an obligation either himself to tell the FBI or to, at least when questioned about it, then confess that he had indeed found out and knew the background. And he chose to do not only neither of those things, neither himself inform on the Republicans, of which he was a member, nor keep silent about it when asked. He actually actively obstructed justice. That is, essentially, he told the FBI, look the other way. And that's a crime. That's obstruction of justice, right? And so what we have is a minor incident, like a traffic violation. But the person who is committing the traffic violation, instead of saying, oh, yeah, sorry, you know, happy to pay my fine, gets out of the car and tells the police officer, do you know who I am? You know, I'm a district counselor. I'm the mayor. I'm actually your boss. So you've got to look the other way. Even though I've committed a crime, I'm your boss, so I can't commit crime. And that made its way all the way up to the President of the United States, who then subsequently also lied to the American people, so that not only was he in some sense likely to be criminally indicted, but lost all credibility with the American people. And the third part is the aspect that gives me, or has been, one of those things that as a child and now as an adult and as a scholar of American civilization, gives me great succor and hope, and reminds me how brilliant the American political system and institutions and people in their own way are or were. So you have the President of the United States, who has titular control over the justice system, being the chief executive, and yet the injustice system has to investigate crimes, and it has to do so, justice being blind, with a nonpartisan aspect. And that can be complicated. In many countries, of course, there's nothing like that. No one's investigating Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping, right? That just is a non-starter. But in the United States, like New Zealand, in theory, there are walls of separation that allow inhibit the possibility of even the highest actors with the greatest power breaking the law and getting away with it. So in the United States, it's a mixture of institutions, separation of powers, and public opinion. So Richard Nixon clearly committed crimes, but it was not clear how and who would prosecute him for those crimes and if that was good. So the Democrats, who were rightly upset about election they lost, parenthetically, they were never going to win that election, which is the joke here, correctly up in arms about the fact that they'd been cheated out of an election and that the president, who is also in the opposite party, should pay for this, and all Republicans should pay for this. But of course, that's partisan. So you have a partisan political issue and then also a constitutional one. And so how this gets settled is that you absolutely need a supermajority in the American Congress to, say, for example, impeach a president. And so it's up to the Democrats to convince the Republicans to go against their political interest, which is well nigh impossible to do. But the combination of Democrats saying, look, you know, this is a crime. If we're in that White House and we do this, you know that you should pursue it the way we are. And by the way, ask your constituent. Your constituents think your president's a crook. Right? Famously, Richard Nixon got on TV and said, American people deserve to know whether their president is a crook. Well, I am not a crook. You look that one up, Liam. It's so funny. Well, he is a crook. And so most Americans began to feel that way. So Republicans, and this is why I love America, it's not an ideal place. It's a real place. So Republicans realized their self-interest coincided with the greater good. And so they told President Nixon, look, we're going to vote against you. That means that there'll be a majority or supermajority in the House and the Senate, which means you'll be impeached. And no president's ever been impeached and thrown out of office. You'll be impeached, you'll be convicted, and you'll never be able to practice law. You'll just be humiliated, as will the country. So you don't have the support of your own party, sir. You must resign. I don't know, August 9th, 1974. I don't know the date. I don't remember.
Something through
I'd
that.
I have to look that up. But it's an all. I believe it's August, the beginning of August 1974. Ultimately, Nixon resigns.
How did America reckon with this scandal, both actively and then over the past 50 years?
So, again, I think most Americans reacted not unlike me. That is, I think in this way, I'm not atypical. Maybe I can explain it more clearly, but I think I'm explaining what most Americans, and I'm a Democrat, and I come from a very Democratic family. I came from a family that raised me to believe that Richard Edmund Nixon was evil and poisonous. So it's easy for me to tell a story of bad Republicans with Democrats and stuff, but I don't want to do that. I resist that. What I find is that most Americans in the end probably felt two things. One was, wow, I've always thought politics was a little bit corrupt, but this is pretty stupid. the second one was, yeah, the system in its own way worked. The president is not Xi Jinping. The president is not Vladimir Putin or Stalin or Hitler or whatever you want. The president committed a petty crime. In fact, he didn't even commit the crime. He just found out about it and covered it up. And that's enough. That's enough for the most powerful person in the country
to
be thrown out of office. That's amazing. That's a great thing. That's not a bad thing. That's an astonishingly good. It's hard to imagine anywhere else in history at any time things like this happen.
Do you think that there were any lessons that could have or were learned for New Zealand from this event?
Rule of law is a remarkable thing. It's not everything, but it's a great start when you add in rule of law and open information and a healthy journalism core, what we call the fourth estate. If you add all of these in, then you end up with a healthy polity that can deal with a corrupt individual or group, even at the top of power, and remove it. So I think it's incumbent upon us that we'll probably have bad people in bad places. Power corrupts, right? So how do you deal with it? Mm-hmm. And if you deal with it well, then you remind citizens that it is their country and they have every reason to love their country without being foolishly patriotic.
What links do you think can be drawn to the Watergate scandal and the current court hearings of the January 6th Capitol riots?
Let's take people at their word. So we'll take the Democratic leadership in Congress, Chuck Schumer from my home state of New York, or Nancy Pelosi from California, or even one of the Republicans is Liz Cheney. In any event, these folks, what's their argument? Their argument is that we had a crisis of January 6th, that the president, the sitting president, because he lost an election bid, tried to overthrow the institutions of the United States through violence by inciting the takeover of the United States Capitol. And that's a tremendously powerful, potent, and if true, right, existential danger to the American Republic. So always take people, Liam, in my view, at their word, and then logically extend from that.
That was the University of Canterbury's Peter Field chatting about the Watergate scandal on the 50th anniversary of the break-in that started it all.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.